You've heard this reading before, but don't worry. I enjoy a good rerun, and I've seen most Seinfeld episodes half a dozen times. But the sermon's not a rerun. The reading is about what's supposed to have happened right after God exiled the first human beings from the garden. It's so rich that, like a good Seinfeld episode, we get more from it each time through. Here we go. The man lay with his wife Eve, and she conceived and gave birth to Cain. She said, "With the help of the Lord, I have brought a man into being." Afterwards, she had another child, his brother Abel. Abel was a shepherd, and Cain a tiller of the soil. The day came when Cain brought some of the produce of the soil as a gift to the Lord. And Abel brought some of the firstborn of the flock, the fat portions of them. The Lord received Abel and his gift with favor, but Cain and his gift he did not receive. Cain was very angry, and his face fell. Then the Lord said to Cain, "Why are you so angry and cast down? What are you so grumpy about? If you do well, you are accepted. If not, sin is a demon crouching at the door. It shall be eager for you, and you will be mastered by it." Cain said to his brother Abel, "Let's go into the open country." While they were there, Cain attacked his brother Abel and murdered him. Then the Lord said to Cain, "Where's your brother Abel?" Cain answered, "I do not know. Am I my brother's keeper?" The Lord said, "What have you done? Hark, your brother's blood that's been shed is crying to me from the ground. Now you are accursed and banished from the ground which has opened its mouth wide to receive your brother's blood. When you till the ground, it will no longer yield you its wealth. You shall be a vagrant and a wanderer on earth." Then Cain went out from the Lord's presence and settled in the land of Nod to the east of Eden. Then Cain lay with his wife, and she conceived and bore Enoch. Cain was then building a city, which he named Enoch after his son. Enoch begot Irad, Irad begot Mehujael, Mehujael begot Methushael, Methushael begot Lamech, and there's our string of begettings, just like you might expect. Aside from the brutal murder of an innocent man by his brother, what's wrong with this story? Some people think that all of this laying together has some sort of connection to original sin rather than being one of the ordinary human things people sometimes do to love and comfort each other. I'll bet that few of us here think there's anything wrong with that, but is there anything that seems wrong with the chain of begettings I just read to you? Maybe starting with the first one where Cain and his wife beget Enoch? Where did she come from, if the only people in the world at the time are Adam, Eve, and Cain? Who was Mrs. Cain? That's something to ponder while we hear Deborah play. Well, thank you, Deborah. So many of you will recognize that as the show that included singing by the master of grumpy, Archie Bunker, from All in the Family, and Edith's high-pitched voice right along with them. Those were the days. Well, I love media, as you can tell. Summer movies aren't usually the best Hollywood has to offer, but back in 1997, the movie Contact, based on the book by Carl Sagan and starring Jodie Foster, was many cuts above the average June to September fare. It's about the search for extraterrestrial intelligence and one woman's struggle to finally make contact with it by sending coded signals into space, listening for any signals that come in return. Foster's character is an astrophysicist and a religious skeptic who at one point has a fling with a handsome young minister. She recalls for him how, as a little girl, she used to ask troubling questions at church Sunday school classes, like, "Well, if Adam and Eve first had Cain and then Abel, and those were the only people in the world yet, then who is this Mrs. Cain?" She says that's the question that got her kicked out of Sunday school. She's still asking questions like this one, and the movie slowly reveals for us how it is something quite worthy of being called faith that keeps her asking. It's that urge to make contact with something out there, with another thinking mind, another speaking voice, and get something more from the exchange than just mysterious signs and wonders. It's an urge that may go all the way back to Cain and Abel and that strange sacrifice they performed for no apparent reason. She uses microwaves where they used smoke from a fire, but the question's the same. Whoever you are, wherever you are, here's something for you. Are you receiving it? Are you receiving me? Who was Mrs. Cain? How can Cain beget Enoch with her and the generations that follow when the only woman on earth yet is Eve, his own mother? You can see why a Sunday school teacher might not want to get into this. It's a good question. Nothing more is said of Mrs. Cain in the scriptures, but scripture's not the only place where the story of scripture characters were elaborated. A large body of extra scriptural legends circulated throughout the Near East for centuries and found their ways into the teachings of rabbis and Christian priests and later on Muslim religious teachers. They show us how people played creatively with the texts and suggest that we can too. One Jewish legend tells us that angels helped Eve with Cain's birth and that the baby was a radiant creature. He stood on his feet just moments after birth and ran off and returned with a present for his mother, a stalk of straw. So Eve named him Cain, which means straw. After the more ordinary birth of his brother Abel, Eve has a dream in which she sees her second child's blood flowing into the mouth of Cain without benefit of a straw. Excuse me. Eve tells Adam about this dream and he separates the boys, teaching them different livelihoods. Cain becomes a farmer, Abel a shepherd. I should mention on the day before Labor Day that labor options were pretty limited at the time. Adam suggests that his sons offer the sacrifice of the products of their labors to God. Abel selects his fattest sheep and offers it without taking any for himself, while Cain eats his own meal of the finest grains first, then offers God just a few leftover flax seeds, a well-known laxative, like that cereal I showed you in the kids' book. God is insulted, but that's just God. If the Bible tells us anything here, it's that people are the ones we'd better watch out for. The legend gives us another reason for the boys' rivalry. Each boy, it tells us, had been born together with a twin sister who was to be his wife. But as they grew into adults, Cain fell in love with Abel's twin and began looking for any excuse he could find to do away with his brother and take Abel's betrothed partner for himself. The bad outcome of the sacrifice to God provided that excuse, along with a partial answer to the question, who was Mrs. Cain? She was one of the twin sisters of one of the first two boys in the world. What we don't know yet is whether Cain won the woman he coveted by killing her twin, or if mom or dad or God did something to prevent it. That Cain should covet Abel's twin poses tough questions, especially for a modern reader, post-Freud, and what's more important, post-Seinfeld. Who was the woman whom Cain wanted to be his Mrs. Cain? The surface answer is that she was Abel's twin. But what does this tell us about Cain? What would it mean for you to covet someone's twin as your sexual partner? I'm not suggesting that there's one easy answer, but it does make you think, doesn't it? You could suggest that's the reason for having a problem like this in the scriptures in the first place. Who is Mrs. Cain? It's sort of like a Zen koan to meditate on until you have a breakthrough of understanding, or else it's enough to make you want to do something easy instead, like run and turn on the TV. Do you think people in the old days used to talk about Bible characters like we do about TV characters now? I do. Anyway, in one of my favorite episodes of Seinfeld, the famous show about nothing that managed to also be about everything we say and do and about what we do, George Costanza, Jerry's best friend since childhood and his virtual brother since both men were the only child in their biological families, finds himself dating the woman of his dreams, someone who's everything he's been looking for, But then another friend mentions that George's girlfriend looks quite a bit like Jerry. She really does. And the effect is enhanced when she's forced to cut her hair short after getting something like gum stuck in it, and so becomes a spitting image of Seinfeld. This proves unbearable for George, who has always had doubts about his own sexual identity. Has George been looking for Jerry in this woman? Does he really want to be partnered in marriage with his virtual brother only in female form? Is that why Cain coveted Abel's twin so passionately? Why he killed his own brother so he could take the other man's spitting image for his wife? Did he want his brother Abel to be his Mrs. Cain? Extra scriptural legend about Cain and Abel takes a different twist in the Islamic versions. And these were told that Cain was conceived when Adam and Eve had intercourse before eating the fruit of the forbidden tree of knowledge, which reminds us that from a Muslim viewpoint, this knowledge was not sexual knowledge as it was for many Christian interpreters. So Cain was born effortlessly, with no pain or bleeding, without sin, and with an equally pure twin sister. Not only that, this first set of twins were born in paradise itself, not in our world. Abel was conceived when Adam and Eve were expelled from the garden. So he was born in pain like the rest of us on the same earth where we live. So was his twin sister. We're told next that this pattern of male and female twin births continued throughout all 120 of Eve's pregnancies. That's right, 120. We got a world to populate here, right? We get some other interesting details in this Muslim version of the story. We hear that Cain was 25 when he killed Abel, who was 20 years old. Also, Cain's twin sister has a name, Ghalima, which means a slender reed. Beautiful, isn't it? So was she, according to the legend. We don't learn a name for Abel's twin. Cain is betrothed to this little sister at her birth, while the newborn Abel is betrothed to the older Ghalima. When they grow up, Cain refuses to marry Abel's twin. He covets his own twin for himself, a woman born in paradise like he was, pure and sinless like he is so far. This Islamic version of the story explains that the real purpose of Cain and Abel's sacrifice was to decide this question of who should marry whom. God accepts Abel's sacrifice, but not Cain's, as a sign that the marriages should take place as planned. Cain to Abel's twin and Abel to Cain's. Still, Cain refuses to accept the decision. The Quran tells us very suggestively that at this point, his soul suggested that he kill his brother. In another of my favorite Seinfeld episodes, Jerry, who's been dating someone new almost every week, unexpectedly finds his soulmate and quickly proposes marriage. She's played by fellow comedian Jane Ann Garofalo, who has a brilliant acerbic wit like Jerry's. Both see things exactly the same way. Both like to eat breakfast cereal for supper. Both find the same things funny. They're so much alike that they're practically twins. Before too long, this sameness of sense and spirit starts to grate on the couple's nerves. Jerry realizes that he's been in love with himself, but now that he sees himself reflected constantly from every angle, he doesn't really like himself that much. Meanwhile, Jane Ann comes to the same conclusion. When they get together to break things off, they practically steal the words from each other's mouths. When reading the Jewish legends of Cain and Abel, we're left to wonder how much of Cain's passion for Abel's twin may really have been a desire to possess Abel. When we read the Islamic versions of the story where Cain lusts for his own twin, we must ask, is Cain's real passion for himself? Does he simply covet himself in female form? Is he driven to murder by such a desire? It's a question that could get us thrown out of a whole variety of religious schools, but we can't quite avoid asking, did Cain himself maybe want to be Mrs. Cain? Think about it for a moment. What if you could split off from yourself and become your own most perfect love match? You could be any sex you want to be, even one that hasn't been invented yet. Pretty compelling thought, isn't it? You and your partner as two forms of the same being, able and eager to satisfy each other in every way as if satisfying yourself in bed, in cooking, choosing colors for the kitchen, you name it. It's like a match made in paradise, just like Cain and Kalima. Just you two, a perfect pair. And a dead boar before too long. I'll bet that like Jerry and Jane Ann, after a brief spell of easy satisfaction, most of us would be longing again for partners a bit less like ourselves, a bit more other. I think most of us have learned that true relationship is not about coveting ourselves, but about meeting something, someone other. About making some kind of contact, like Jodie Foster's scientist character hopes to do and has faith that she can and will. Those of us who have them might even be longing for the partners who are with us now, who accept us with all of our differences, big or small. The Quran says of Cain that his soul suggested that he kill his brother. This suggests to me that Cain is already divided in some profound way within himself. His soul suggests to Cain as if it were something apart from him. Likewise, the Torah speaks of Cain's approaching sin as a demon crouching at the door, apart from Cain the man. Some other Jewish legends expand on this notion of Cain's dividedness. They say that God created seven earths, not one. Adam and Eve were banished after eating the forbidden fruit to Erez, the first lowest earth, a dark place without light, utterly void. Slowly the couple worked their way by penance up to the seventh earth, Tebel. After killing Abel, Cain was banished with his descendants to the third earth, the Arka, where the inhabitants dwell in conflict, sharply divided within and among themselves. Here's a quote. Some of the Cainites are giants. Some of them are dwarfs. They have two heads, wherefore they can never arrive at a decision. They're always at loggerheads with themselves. It may happen that they are pious now, only to be inclined to do evil the next moment. The legend doesn't tell us if one of the Cainites' heads can be male and the other female, or of any other options. Neither does it tell us if Mrs. Cain was Cain's own twin or his brother's, but we can be sure that she went with them so they could populate whatever world they settled with their descendants, those Cainites. What a kind and loyal soul. There's no sign that she did anything to deserve sharing Cain's punishment. They might have been as different from each other as that pre-Seinfeld TV couple, Edith and Archie Bunker. You remember Archie? He's always grumpy, always turning in anger on members of his family. But Edith is nothing like him. Except maybe for physical appearance, there's no sign that Mrs. Cain was anything like her husband. But there's every sign that she accepted him and forgave. Look around you, and I wish we could be together in the same room right now at the senior center. Anyway, look around you. Look at those faces in the Zoom boxes. Do you see the signs? Here we are. We are the signs. Whoever she was, wherever she came from, for our story to continue, there must have been a Mrs. Cain who somehow accepted and forgave and received that bitter man. accepted and forgave the man who killed Abel, who may have been her twin, almost the very image of herself. At the very least, he must have been her brother, as much as he was Cain's. And if we will allow our minds to play freely and enter the world of the Bible story, we must be her children. And the children, not of poor, sweet Abel, but of Cain. Maybe not all of us, but at least those of us who sometimes feel huge and important like giants and sometimes small and unnoticed like dwarves, who sometimes feel as if we have twin heads that argue like siblings over every decision, who may sometimes feel pious and respectful, but the next moment feel like breaking something or somebody. Maybe people like us are more able to accept each other than we would be if we thought ourselves to be perfectly proportioned and perfectly whole, like creatures born in paradise, not right here on earth. No cooties. And so finally, who was Mrs. Cain? She's part of who we are, at least as much as Cain himself. She's our capacity to forgive and accept and receive. The yes to balance Cain's no. And maybe tip the weight of things the way they have to go if we are ever to make it through this world. Not even God could receive what Cain had to offer, but she could. Who was she, really? We still can't say for sure, but the stories suggest that she must have really been somebody, and that we, dear people, big and small, would be nobody now without her. Amen.